call this initial meeting of the MARSS to order. This is 2:03 p.m. on July 27th, 2017. My name is Bert Black. I am the representative of the Secretary of State on this working group, and I have been designated pursuant to Subdivision 4 of the Enabling Statute or Enabling Provision to convene this meeting, and so therefore I do so. Members, we do not have a written agenda at this time, but I am informed that there is a, first of all, you have a large amount of materials before you. I am also informed that there is a presentation, and the enabling provision does say that the working group must elect a chair from among its members at the first meeting. We do have two members who are not yet here, Christine Forsyth and Denise Collins, representing the OAH. And so unless there is objection, I would like to suggest that we hear the presentation first to give our absent members a chance to get here, and then we can proceed to other business. Although before we hear the presentation, I would ask members if, other than the presentation and the election of the chair, you have suggestions for today's meeting. Okay. Before we proceed to the presentation, before that, although you can certainly start to get prepped up there, I would like for the record to have everybody indicate, starting with Ms. Winget, their name and their agency. This meeting is being recorded. So,
Patricia Winget, Minnesota Department of Health.
And Beth Sheffer, Department of Transportation.
Rebecca Gaspard, Board of Cosmetologist Examiners.
Mary Lynn, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Jody Pope, Campaign Finance Board.
Wendy Wilson-Legg, Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry.
Justine Forsyth, IRC representative from the Department of Education.
Thank you, everybody. Okay, we will proceed to the presentation. Thank you for appearing before us this afternoon. And for the record, please state your name and your office.
Yeah, my name is Melissa Patch. I'm from the Office of the Revisor of Statutes, and I'm a software developer there and was heavily involved in the pilot project that kind of led to this working group. So I just thought we would give you a little background of, one, why the pilot project was done, and also kind of where we left things with the pilot project. That packet of materials that you were given is kind of the output from our efforts, and many of you were volunteers that discussed the system with us and helped shape the requirements. So just a little bit of background, the revisor's office started collecting items from rulemaking records in the 80s, and we did this for internal use so that our office could search the records and kind of keep track of what was happening with rulemaking, since we're involved in drafting the rules. And then in 2012, we actually made that data available in a beta system that gave...
I'm sorry, Ms. Patch. Just for the members, the materials, although we're appreciative of the PowerPoint, and some of us are beyond the stage of being able to read something from that screen. So, members, these materials are also in the packet about six pages from the end.
Oh, yep. Sorry.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So, we did make the data in our internal system available in 2012 as a beta system. People can search it and basically follow rulemakings with the data that we have. And then in law 2015, a law was adopted that gave us funds to conduct a pilot project. And we used those funds to hire a couple consultants, and we met with a lot of agency people to kind of, one, understand the rulemaking process, and then identify requirements for a system that would keep track of all of these rulemakings. So basically, during the pilot project, we identified some system goals that we wanted to support. One was centralized public access. Right now, all of the rulemakings are with whatever agencies are in charge of the rulemaking, and we want to provide a way for the public to have one system to go to. And then another piece was the authentication of the records. From online data, you need to make sure that you're getting it from the original source and that you have the official document. So authentication of the records in the system. Another thing was centralized preservation. Right now, each agency is responsible for preserving their rulemakings. And the retention schedule, as you know, is forever. It's permanent retention for these records. So just a centralized way so that all agencies are doing that in the same manner. And then we wanted the system to have comprehensive security features for data uploads and data retrieval. And then general searching and reporting. The public wants to be able to kind of keep track of these rulemakings and just an easy way for them to find related rulemakings and know where things are in the process. And so then with the pilot project, once we had those system goals, we kind of had certain outputs that we came up with. And one was the official rulemaking record item list that is included in your packet. And what we found was Chapter 14 has an outline of what it is, but there's a lot that is required by OAH that is kind of just in a catch-all for rulemaking. So we have a full list of what we found in talking to different agencies. And then we came up with some life cycles for rulemakings, which is kind of the state that a rulemaking goes in: pre-proposal, proposed rulemakings, and then adopted rulemaking. So there's, I think those are in your packets as well. We came up with those. And then finalized kind of four basic swim lane diagrams, which there are very small printouts in your packets. We can give electronic versions where you can actually maybe read what those are, but we kind of identified the process and put them into swim lane diagrams. So you can see all the processes involved and the offices involved in rulemaking. And then we came up, based on those documentation, we came up with requirements for the system as we understood them. And those are also in your packet as well. And with those requirements, we looked into different technology and did three prototypes of a working system. And then also included is the final report, which contains the technology recommendations, the phases of system development, and the overall cost and timeline to build the system. So you take a look here, this kind of illustrates why we felt that this type of system was important. On the left, you'll see this is our beta system, our rule status system that shows rulemakings. And on the right, we have highlighted what pieces of an official rulemaking record we do not have. We don't have public comments in our system. We don't have transcripts of the hearings. There's no additional documents that are required by the Office of Administrative Hearings. And then the order actually adopting the rule is not in our beta system. So it's definitely not a complete record, even though the data is available to the public. And so this is what our system is like today. There are basically four offices that are uploading to the system. We have documents that come from OAH. We have one person in the revisor's office who puts the data into our beta system, and then we programmatically get other additional documents from the state register and the legislative reference library. And then all of those are in our rule status system, and then they're presented to the public. The public is able to search and view these documents. However, the documents in our system are coming from multiple websites. The state register recently redid their website, and the links in our beta system were broken, and so nobody could view any of the state register publications for these documentations. So that just kind of illustrates this isn't a complete system, that all the documents are not contained in this system. So there's no security layer prior to data uploads or at data retrieval. Everything in the system is just in the system and available. There's no robust preservation and authentication of the data. that is in these rulemaking records. So there's definite places for improvement in our beta system today. And so with the pilot, we came up with a proposed system. And as you can see, you know, we still have OAH Users Revisor's Office, the state register, but we've added the Secretary of State and all the agencies as people who are responsible for uploading this data. And you can see that they're authenticated users. We want to add a security layer to the system so that we can really know who's putting data in and, you know, kind of control what data is put out. And as you can see, you know, we've got legislature, agencies, the public, the courts, all of these people have interest in rulemaking. We propose that the MARS system have customized reporting, searching and retrieving documents from a single website, a security layer prior to document uploads, and at the time people retrieve documents from the system. We want a complete rulemaking record archived and preserved permanently, as the retention schedule for rulemakings is. And then just authentication, that people using this system know that they are getting the true and official version of the documents in the system. And so here's just a little outline on what we have today in our beta system and what we proposed in our final report. The system today stores links to documents that can break. There's one person in our office entering the data, and if that person is out on vacation, it may be 2-3 weeks before the data gets uploaded. There's no authentication or robust preservation, and then there's no real security layer surrounding the data uploads. The proposed system would store the complete rulemaking records. We want to get all of the official documents into the system. So that there's one central source for official rulemaking records. Agency staff would be responsible for entering the data and keeping the record up to date with anything that happens in the rulemaking, whether that be at the time something happens or, you know, if you want to compile your rulemaking at the end of the process. There's areas of improvements that we could go down, and that's, you know, customized reports for the legislature, agencies, and the public, notifications of documents that are added to the system, something like, I don't know if you're familiar with My Bills that people use to track bills, but a subscription service where you can sign up to follow a rulemaking and then notifications will be sent out, document authentication, support for sensitive data, such as any redacted content, audio files. And then one system to preserve all of agencies' rulemakings and security measures designed for agencies and the public's needs. And so that's kind of where we left off with the pilot project. We have a list of requirements that's in your packet and, you know, kind of the recommendations that we found with the technology that we were able to investigate. And then in 2017, they, of course, started this working group, and we will need to refine the requirements that we came up with in the pilot project and then define a funding mechanism is, I think, what this group is going to be charged with. So I don't know if there are any questions as far as what's out there. There is a link to our current beta system if you want to play around with that, or if you have any questions, you can definitely contact us.
Okay, yeah. Working group members, questions for Ms. Patch? Okay. Let me simply note that during the presentation, Denise Collins joined us from the as representative of the OAH, so we have a full complement of members now. Do any of the members have any questions about the contents of this large packet of information that we've been given? Seems fairly self-explanatory. The final report, the final report was developed by the consultant. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, having heard the presentation, the only other item of business that we have, that we know we have, it's not the final item of business, is the election of a chair of the working group. I will tell you right now, I am not interested in being the chair, only the convener for today, because I'm going to be out of the state for 6 weeks during the height of the work that's going to be done in this committee. I will declare nominations open for chair of the working group, Member Winget.
Well, I would like to nominate Justine Forsyth-Hahn, the IRC's representative, to serve as chair. She was on this, what do we call it, a task force? Is that what we called it?
Mm-hmm.
That attended all of the meetings that went into putting this material together. So
all
that's
right.
My
do you accept
nomination.
The nomination?
I do.
Okay. Are there any further nominations? Seeing no further nominations, I'll indicate the nominations are closed, and the membership will take a vote. All those in favor of Justine Forsyth-Hahn as chair of the group, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. You can start now, or you can start at the end of this, or at the next meeting, or whatever.
Why don't I start at the next meeting, since you're on a roll?
All right. Okay. So I guess that completes the required work of the committee, but I think we probably have some more to hear about. First of all, do any of the members have any comments on the presentation or on the materials or just generally? Yes, Member Winget.
Thank you, Melissa, for your fine presentation. I'm looking at the it's the final report, number 3, which is page 3 of 22, it says in the corner. And you look at the second page, there's this paragraph at the end that talks about estimated implementation costs. Were you involved, Melissa, in putting those costs together?
Yes, I was.
So is there additional information that could the committee could look at some point, or was this just a starting point, or what is this?
So basically, we went through and evaluated different levels of technology and got quotes from vendors in order to come up with the final implementation costs outlined in this report. We do have additional data that we received from the different vendors, and you know, we have other materials if you would like them as well. We are also working on an in-house cost estimation to build it in-house. The final report actually identified more of a off-the-shelf software, so we can provide you with that once we've completed it.
Yeah. Having said that, now I'm thinking of what that means to be looking at that data, and mm-hmm. I think that might not be useful
okay.
to us at this point. So.
Well, it is available if you should decide you do need it.
Thank you. Members, I would simply note at this time the provisions of Subdivision 3 of the enabling provision, which says the working group must report by February 1st, 2018, so that's before the beginning of the next legislative session, to the chairs and ranking minority members of the committees in the House of Representatives and Senate with jurisdiction over policy and finance for the legislature. Report must identify the functional and non-functional requirements of the MARS system. I'm not sure what a non-functional requirement is. Requirement that doesn't have computers or things that we're excluding?
It is more of a technical requirement. So something like a non-functional requirement would be the size of the data that the system has to support, or you know, the file formats that need to report. The functional requirement.
Static kinds of things?
Yeah, you could view it that way, yeah. The functional requirements are more how users would interact with the system and what the system needs to do, whereas the non-functional requirements are more the back-end technical side of things. So I would think that as far as non-functional, you would probably need computer staff involved in those types of decisions.
Right. Thank you. The last sentence of that subdivision says, the working group must define a funding mechanism to share the cost to build and maintain the MARS system among state agencies and departments. And you can all interpret that the way you want. The way I interpreted this is there isn't going to be an appropriation. It's going to come out of, it'll be an additional cost of rulemaking or some other levy on participating, that is to say, all state agencies that have rulemaking authority. In any case, we have to figure out how to pay for this thing. I think that's pretty clear from that last sentence. Mr. Reviser, do you have any suggestions for the group?
I do.
All right. Please join us.
I'm Paul Mirnak. I'm the reviser. As to one of your duties, that is to help flesh out the requirements of the system, we have retained Ms. Leanne Simonson. She's a business process modeler that assisted us with the pilot project. And she will be providing direct support to this group, as Melissa will, to flesh this out. How you go forward, I think, is up to the working group. The reviser was charged with convening the meeting. I think he's done that. And we'll provide whatever support we can, including administrative support. And so, you know, I would look forward to working with the chair and the members and helping you figure out how you're going to discharge these duties and what information we can provide. One other little thing about the report, the final report you were looking at. Essentially, we looked at two options. Could we go out and purchase everything we needed for this system? Is there a system out there or pieces that would support everything that we thought folks wanted from the system? We determined that that wasn't the case. And so the recommendation in the final report really dealt with going out and purchasing hardware and software and then heavily customizing that software. And I think that's where the cost in that system, because of that, we decided to start looking at, as Ms. Patch said, what it would cost and what resources would be necessary to build this in-house. We would be happy to continue to explore those costs, but I think we need some direction from the working group. I think the working group can provide some assistance by determining what requirements you think the system will have. And that involves the discussion of, is it a system that just captures the existing rulemaking record, preserves it, maintains it, or is it a system that does that and has additional functionality that Ms. Patch was talking about, the notification system, tracking, all those other sorts of things. And so I think that would be valuable to us, because once those decisions are made, we can do a better job in making sure that we have analyze the costs.
Thank you, Mr. Reviser. Are there any other members of the audience who would like to address the working group? Okay. Is there any discussion among members of the working group about, this is sort of a large amount of information, and so I don't know that it's I've got some homework to do here. I think I would like to have, if we can get the schematics sent to us so that we can get those, we can blow those up on our computer screens and read them. I'm going to have to, the constraints of getting it on an 8.5 by 11 page don't do this justice. Obviously, we all know that rulemaking is a complicated process, but I think now we have graphic proof that it's a complicated process. Any general comments, Chair Hahn?
One thing that is not in the law that identifies what this group is responsible for, it only talks about a funding mechanism to share the cost and build and maintain the MARS system. It doesn't talk about a funding for any extra cost to the agencies themselves. And here's what I'm thinking about. In our agency, certainly before uploading information received from the public, we would have to carefully review it and redact any information that is not public, such as we do workers' compensation rules, and sometimes people include
social
copies of their medical record that may have a social security number. Even if we say in the rulemaking, anything that you provide will be public, I would not be comfortable uploading somebody's social security number to a system. And I'm not sure that iPad would be comfortable with me doing that.
Right.
So I think that one thing to think about is there would be some extra costs that are not included in the system costs. And is that something that we should, I mean, I suppose that's a non-functional requirement of the MARS system. It won't be doing any redacting. And that would be a cost that would have to be borne by the individual agencies. Is that would be a non-functional requirement?
Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
Ms. Legg, I think that you would be doing a service if the working group in the final report educated the legislature on not only the cost of the system, but the cost to the agencies in now having to operate in the new system, but also whatever cost savings to the agencies would be generated by having this system instead of the present.
Right. And I would note that, of course, if somebody asked for a copy of the record,
right,
we would still have to redact that.
Absolutely. Of course,
although,
not that people don't always ask for them.
I have a couple of boxes that have been gathering dust for quite some time, yes. Never touched. Kirsten, you had a comment.
Yeah, I was just wondering, the phase one and phase two that is listed on here, are these sort of bare minimum things that we want to be part of the system, or is this like best case scenario? I'm just wondering, with the pricing, could we take things out to modify the price, or would we even want to offer a couple different levels, or what do these numbers reflect?
So, I mean, basically the list of requirements you have before you are like the dream system that has all the workflow, all the notifications. And when we came up with cost estimates, we did break it down into two phases. The first phase was more the core things and not so much the bells and whistles of workflow. So to answer your question, I think the requirements drive the cost of the system for sure, but depending on which pieces, you know, are important and not, it may affect the cost in different ways. So I think that that's just kind of a dialogue that we need to keep open in order to really see, you know, if cost is the biggest concern, which pieces could, you know, lower the cost, which pieces are the ones that would have an effect on the overall budget. So,
Mr. Chair, members, the other piece of practical advice I think we have in looking at that, correct me if I'm wrong, is our feeling would be, if you look at the report and you look at phase one, for example, and say, yeah, phase one is what we'd want to do. We're not sure that we would like phase two. I think our concern is that you would be overbuying, because the content management system that is the centerpiece of that is designed to support all of phase two. So if the decision is only made to go with phase one, perhaps we should go down another avenue.
I would agree with that, yes.
So you're saying that the content management system really does not have much relevance to phase one, particularly it has much more to phase two. Is that accurate?
Yes, I think it gives you a building block to add phase two, but it is not necessary for phase one.
Not necessary for phase one. But otherwise, what you have listed on page two as phase one, the seven items. That is a complete system. It's not the entire system, but it is complete in the sense that it would be operational on its own.
Yes.
Okay. Wendy.
So just a question then about the cost that Ms. Winchett mentioned on page 4. Talks about phase one costs $3 million, phase two costs $2 million, resulting annual maintenance $510,000. If this group were to recommend, well, just phase one, mm-hmm. did you look at the costs of just phase one without phase two?
That is what Paul was referring to as far as an in-house build.
It would be overbuying, he said. So I'm assuming the $3 million is an overestimate for the phase one?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Legg, one of the reasons why we decided after we were doing the report to start looking at the costs of a customized build in-house was we were concerned that if the cost of the entire system was so large that no one would want to pursue this, but phase one would be appealing, that because of we recognize that phase one with a content management system would be overbuilding, we decided to start the process of determining what the resources would be to build it in-house without a content management system, or to add it later. I think Ms. Patch can talk to you either in additional meetings or today, if you'd like to pursue it, about the flexibility that we would have in building the system in-house and the potential for adding functionality later down the road.
Would members like to hear that? Yeah. Okay. I don't see any objection.
Yes, that's my point.
Mm-hmm. All right. Why don't you go ahead and tell us what you can now about that.
Right. So, I mean, we are investigating this. Mr. Marinek said the ability to, you know, put together a system in-house. We have in the revisor's office basically a back-end structure that we currently use. And this plan would be purchasing, or the plan in the final report would be purchasing a content management system that is kind of standalone, and it doesn't leverage our current technology that we have. But it does add the bells and whistles of workflow and notifications in the future. If we kind of went with using what we have, it would kind of be a layer on top of our beta system, if you kind of look at it that way. The costs, we're still working out the specifics of that, but a lot of the costs in the final report are actually purchasing the software, the content management system software, and so there definitely wouldn't be that aspect of it, but it does have limitations in the future for adding some of the bells and whistles, or it could be that the bells and whistles are an additional cost later on. Not that we maybe couldn't do them, but it would be more flexible as far as, oh, you know, we didn't start with workflow, but now all of a sudden it's a more important feature, and maybe we could get a new appropriation to add that onto the system. So I think that's the main distinction between the two.
One of the things that I've experienced in computer projects is to make sure that you don't build something which makes it impossible to add on features at a later time, or makes it just tremendously more costly to do so. And I don't know if that's the situation we would be in if we weren't to purchase the content management now, but it sounds like the content management is a significant portion of the $3 million. And I'm not going to ask you to tell me how much unless you know how much. Do you know how much?
Well, I mean, if you look at the final report here, the content management software in phase one is $1.2 million to kind of get that up and running. So it is a significant cost. Not to say that, you know, if we went down the alternate path, that there wouldn't be some sort of upfront cost as well. We're still working on those numbers. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you it is not nearly as significant as that number there.
Okay.
So.
I'm sorry, Wendy.
Sorry, I'm just confused, and I apologize because I'm not really super tech savvy, so
okay.
You're going to have to bear with me a little
That's
bit.
That's fine.
when you talk about the $1.2 million cost for the content management software, that was assuming you would go through with phase one and phase two and customize it to enable phase two.
Mm-hmm.
If you were only looking at phase one, were there other software packages, off-the-shelf software packages, that might be less expensive that could meet those needs?
We did not investigate other software packages that could just do phase one. And what we are looking into now is, with the current software packages that the revisor's office has, could we build a system that does phase one? And that's what we have kind of started to focus on. I mean, if the working group would like us to look at other software products that would only encompass phase one, we would, you know, be able to do that or assist you in doing that. But we've not looked into a software package that only encompasses phase one, because we feel like we already have a technology stack that could support that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Wynn.
I'm wondering if it might be useful for us, or to discuss at a future meeting, whether it would be useful to try to get a cost estimate using current software and enhance as needed to meet phase one. That doesn't mean that it necessarily couldn't be enhanced in the future to add some sort of bell or whistle. I'm just because the dollar amounts to me seem very large, especially since there are a number of agencies who do rulemaking who have $0, a zero budget. A number of the boards don't have any budget at all. So to impose fees for rulemaking, for example, I can see that as being problematic. So I'm just wondering, I mean, we're going to learn more about the systems as the work group meets, but I'm wondering, as part of educating this work group, would it be useful to know what those costs would be?
I think it would be useful. Mr. Revisor.
Mr. Chair, members, that's one way to approach it. What we're suggesting that would help us get better cost estimates for you is to determine what requirements you think the system should have. You can see the requirements that we listed and were operating from in arriving at the cost estimates that we had, but if the working group has a different idea of what the system should do, that would educate us and give us some direction to provide that sort of cost information.
Right.
We could do that for phase one, look at just doing that, but until we know that that's the group's wishes, that all of the functionality in phase one is what you want, we're not sure that would be helpful.
I will say that we have 16 pages of requirements here, which I'm sure nobody has yet digested. So we're going to have to look at these and determine whether there are any that are possible to be removed and whether we'd like them to be removed. Member Winchett.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Revisor, it seems to me that what you're suggesting makes a lot of sense, that while the things that Ms. Legg is presenting are important and will have to be considered by the group, that starting with the requirements, and a lot of that work has already been done, so would it make sense at our next meeting to have a presentation on the requirements, and after we've had a chance to look at them?
Madam Chair, Ms. Winget, yes. And that's why we retained Ms. Simonson, to help with that aspect of the group's work. Decide what requirements are important for the system, and then we can provide the cost estimates for you.
Now, one thing I would like to suggest to the working group is we recently have automated here in the Office of the Secretary of State our open appointments process. Ms. Pope will fondly remember the open appointments process, I'm sure, from her time with us. But that's a project which it took us a very long time really to get any meaningful automation in, but when we did, we built as much as we could, including some workflow, because we weren't sure we'd get back to it for, I mean, it took us 20 years to get, and by the way, you can look at this system yourself on our website under the Boards and Commissions tab. We weren't sure we were going to get back to it for another 20 years. I mean, cost issues aside, the opportunity to automate and have a system, at least in my experience in state government, doesn't come up all that often. And so that is, those are also considerations as to not just what do we want, but what is going to be useful or necessary 10 years, 15 years down the road, because we may not get back to it or make meaningful or have the money to make meaningful changes for that kind of period of time. So, I mean, there's a balance here, I think, between the costs, which we want to be frugal, but I think we do want to make the investment we can. Now, I don't know how much that is, to make the investment we can in a system like this. Certainly it would be a good discussion to have, not only a presentation, but a discussion among members to talk about the requirements. We may or may not agree with the requirements. I can't tell you that right now because I haven't read it. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping we're not going to be in the situation of having to pass it to understand what's in it. I'm sorry, the comments, other comments by members? Yes.
I have a question about the report, the Appendix B with the functional requirements, which is page 1 of 16.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then the non-functional requirements. Is there any way to look at those and relate them to phase 1 and 2?
So there should be a column in your that says if they're phase 1 or 2.
Ah, phase. There we go.
What is phase 3?
So there's kind of things that were kind of talked about as really wish list items that we documented. We didn't want to lose them, but they're not really classified into a specific phase. So that's okay. Where that's at.
All right.
So sort of ideas, but not necessarily something the pilot group wanted to say was a definite requirement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Dream big.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
I have a question about number 3 on the sort of the cost, the phase 1 and phase 2 page. Mm-hmm. Are you hoping, because you mentioned that you only have one person right now that loads in the documents, are you hoping to add those positions to your office regardless of how we move forward, or are those part of the maintenance costs, or just, I guess that's more a question for Mr. Marinak.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Steen, or Ms. Hahn, it depends. I think when we put this together, we had to make certain assumptions, but we didn't know what our next biennial budget would be. And so you'll see we have a Mars administrator. That was in case the base funding for the office was so tight that we couldn't devote any of our existing resources to this. As of now, I think that cost is something that we can absorb. The database administrator, again, we have a crying need for an additional database administrator. We have been trying to get that funded in our operating budget, and we'll continue to try to do that. If we were able to do that, I think, again, the database administrator cost would go away. But I think those are the only two costs, I think, that were flexible in whether they would be important. The rest are just, equipment costs and programming costs.
Okay. And another question. If we were to talk as a committee about the different things in phase 1 and 2, for example, number 2 in phase 2, the public subscription service, to me jumps out as something that I feel is maybe more appropriate for phase 1. So is there a way to get a cost breakdown of the different items? Or if we say, what would it be to kind of move this to phase 1, that's a conversation that we could have, or something drops off, something like that.
Yeah, I think we can definitely have those conversations. Some of the things that are in phase two are in phase two because they would require a content management system or some other software to be purchased. So I think on a case-by-case basis, we would have to kind of discuss those particular items and determine what it would cost to move them to phase one and what, you know, system design considerations we would have to address.
Wendy.
So I'm wondering if it might be more useful for us to not worry about phase one or phase two, but initially decide what is really needed. Mm-hmm. And then other things would be bells and whistles that are nice, but like you're saying, when you say to move to phase one, I'm sort of interpreting that as meaning it's really something we need with this system. So that really something that's needed would be become phase. I mean, it's determining what is needed versus what would be nice.
Mr. Chair, members, and again, I think that's the avenue we're suggesting for you. We have given you the report to show what we thought the costs were of a specific system, but we have not fully developed all the requirements yet. And we would need to know the list of requirements that you think are important, and then we can get you that information after that work is done. I think that's an excellent way to proceed.
Yes, Tristan.
Just a couple questions. Do we want to decide here today how often or the frequency of the meetings? Because that wasn't something that was set out in the statute and or... I'm not sure if you, Melissa or Leanne, will be present at each of those meetings, all of those meetings, whatever we decide is helpful, or what are the options?
We're here to provide, Mr. Chair, we're here to provide support to the working group. And so whenever you decide to meet or whatever you decide to do, we'll try to provide the support information that you need. I'm not sure if you necessarily have to set another meeting. You can meet at the call of the chair and decide when it's appropriate to meet again.
I think it would be the only thing the statute has or the enabling provision has done is give us a final deadline.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, there's so much information that I have to think, and this is a big project. My own sense would be that, yeah, we're going to need some meetings, but more initially, we need to read this information and make some determinations ourselves about which things do we really want. I think that was a point well taken. And I would also point out that people should probably look not only at the requirements, obviously, but also and I'm going to look at those flow charts, but also to look at the user stories in the back. Right before the PowerPoint presentation, there's about 20 pages worth of various user stories that describe on the basis of interviews that your staff had, Mr. Revisor, with various agencies that use various facets of rulemaking. And I know that you talked to me and some of my staff for... the work we do as not as a rulemaking agency, but as a repository in the rulemaking process. But I think we should look at that and make sure, you know, that that's consistent with our sense of the rulemaking process. And I think that supports the requirement conclusions that are in Appendix B, or presumably supports. Without reading it, I'm going to assume it does. But then the question is, you know, what do we want? What do we need? What do we think the system needs? What do we think the public needs? What does the legislature need? So there's a lot to digest, and I guess I would suggest that we have a reading period of at least 2 weeks before the next meeting. Not that the next meeting needs to be in 2 weeks, but... no sooner, I would suggest. Yes.
I'd also suggest that while we read it, I think it's a good idea to think about each requirement. Is this really something to help the public is this something to help the agency?
Or both.
Or both. Because if it comes to putting a number and saying what this is going to cost, I'm sure the legislature is going to want to know, is this a cost? Which portion of this cost is for helping the public versus the agency?
The old Latin phrase, qui bono, who benefits?
Yeah. So I think that's something to keep in mind as we go through the requirements.
Ultimately, I suspect we're going to need to prioritize and make a list of, well, you know, we can go down to here and have a workable system. If you cut us before then, we don't have a workable system. You're wasting your money. We'd really like to go down to this other level and add four or five more things, and then we'd really have a durable, workable system. We'll see. It's going to be a process to go through all of these. And we may add, I mean, it's possible we may also suggest adding some requirements. Does anyone want to propose a meeting time? Do people have access to their calendars?
Line up if we're going to do that.
Do we want to meet at the call of the chair?
I would recommend that we do that for this next meeting. We can promise to bring our calendars to the next meeting, or we can come up with a system, but I think that the chair and the revisor could probably come up with this proposal for us for our next meeting.
I mean, we can simply use Outlook like we did for this meeting, or is there a better way?
I would just ask for clarification. Are we subject to the open meeting law? So if so, the next meeting is considered a special meeting. We have to give at least 3 days public notice.
Well, unless we establish a regular.
That's right. But if it's at the call of the chair, it's not a regular meeting.
No, that's right.
We just looked at this preliminarily and determined that we weren't, but that we were. We should at least follow the open meeting provisions that the legislature follows. For advance notice and access to the documents.
So what, I don't know.
How long is that? Yes.
Yeah, how is that?
Would we post them on your site?
Or? If the task force would like to do that, we'd be happy to host the meetings. We're providing a written agenda, we're taping this today. All of the documents that we've handed out will be accessed on our website.
I assume that we're going to have more than 3 days' notice anyways for the next meeting. So, but it just might be good to know that we need to give it, if we want to give at least that. Whether we need to or not, perhaps I would suggest that we want to give at least that much notice.
It would be prudent.
Members, we were operating on that at least 3 days' notice, and we just made it. But we will work with the chair and do what we can to provide as much advance notice as possible. The other thing that I can offer is during this reading period, take advantage of the folks here as resources. If you have any questions, call. We'll try to explain the report, try to get you the information you think you need.
I might suggest meeting in, say, a month. So we would have a couple weeks of reading and plenty of time to have our notice posted and converse amongst ourselves. And during that time, we can review the list of requirements and come up with questions, and whether it's functional versus non-functional or phase one or phase two, to see what we're feeling is most important.
So this is where it's important that we're not subject to the open meeting law. So if that is, in fact, my understanding, we just need to make sure that we don't do this in, don't reply all. Because that's going to be a violation of the open meeting law. Don't have groups of more than four people. I mean, if you're doing some kind of a text, don't text to more than four of us at once.
Can't transact business with a quorum or more.
Right.
Without giving notice. And that means replying all, asking a question for a decision and replying all counts.
Right, right. So even because number one, while that's the analysis today, somebody else may say, "Oh yes, you are," and then the other thing is, it's just probably a good idea not to violate those provisions in any case, whether we're subject to it or not, just out of a sense of fairness to the public that might want to be involved in this process. So I would take it, Kirsten, that you would determine a specific date and time and location and contact members with the notice. Is that accurate?
Yep.
Okay. And any objection? Okay, hearing none, we'll proceed that way. Is there any other business to come before this working group today? Are there any other materials that you would suggest, Mr. Reviser or Ms. Patch, that we take a look at, or have we got enough?
Other than getting you the schematics.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I would also recommend that members that aren't familiar with the beta system go in and familiarize themselves with the beta system again, because I think that helps you envision what the next step might be.
I guess that leads to a question. So we saw in the PowerPoint, Ms. Patch, we saw the schematic. What percentage, I mean, hard to say, I'm trying to get an order of magnitude sort of on, we have the beta system right now. How much more would phase one be? I mean, we saw the listing out, but is that twice the capability? Is it four times the capability? What is it? Is it geometric or is it exponential?
Well, I mean, definitely a security layer and authenticating documents and basically getting a complete rulemaking record. But I think to accurately answer your question, we would need to know what is your version of phase one.
Okay.
So, to give well, the percentage, well it's that might be difficult to just kind of off the top of our heads come up with. But it's not as significant as adding all of the workflow and notifications.
Okay, yes.
Mr. Chair, members, the way I explain it is the present beta system is put together with spit and baling wire. We would not, even though you can look at the system and say, well, 50% or 60% of the rulemaking record is there already, the documents might be there. They haven't been authenticated. There's no layer of security. The historical information cannot be validated. We wouldn't build it the same way because we're relying on external sources. Ms. Patch talked to you about changing the state register has done that. OAH has done the same thing, and the whole system breaks. The system would be redesigned so that it would capture the original documents.
Right. Okay. All right. No easy answers to my question, but that's okay. I kind of figured that way. Any other business to come before the group? Any final comments by members? All right, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion passes. We are adjourned. For